If you're not there, lonely fever set words in the air. Some things are better left unsaid. I'm gonna spend my days in bed.
Fourth Estate Radio in 1 minute. Mark. Fourth Estate in 30 seconds. Mark. Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid. George W. Bush elaborated on his American Competitiveness Initiative Saturday in his weekly radio address. Bush said his initiative will help Americans the same way that ATMs helped Americans replace bank tellers and protect America against Chinese and Indian innovation. Bush used research and development as a rationale for more tax cuts.
Other countries offer permanent tax incentives for research and development. To keep America the world's leader in technology and innovation, Congress needs to make the tax credit for research and development permanent.
The federal budget deficit is approaching $500 billion. Tensions ran higher today in the war of words between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Western powers. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad Saturday ended Iran's voluntary cooperation with the UN's nuclear watchdog agency. The move comes in retaliation for Saturday's vote by the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency to report Iran's nuclear activities to the UN Security Council. 25,000 people lined up around the Capitol building in Atlanta Saturday, waiting to pay their last respects to Coretta Scott King, widow of slain civil rights pioneer Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Mrs. King's funeral will take place Tuesday in Atlanta. George W. Bush is expected to make remarks at the service. Coretta Scott King passed away Monday night. She was 78 years old. Muslim rioters angered over drawings of Mohammed in a Danish newspaper published last summer set fire Saturday to a building housing the Danish embassy in Damascus, Syria. Danish officials say everyone in the embassy is safe. In a related story, the Vatican said Saturday that freedom of speech, quote, cannot imply the right to offend, unquote, religion, but that, quote, violent actions of protest are deplorable, unquote. The comments came after requests to the Vatican to take a stand regarding, quote, recent offensive representations of religious sentiments of individuals and community, unquote. As many as 1,000 people are feared dead in the aftermath of a fire and the sinking of an Egyptian ferry traversing the waters of the Red Sea. An initial investigation showed a truck erupted in flames in the hold of the ship. The captain's attempts to turn the ship during heavy winds and high seas caused the vessel to capsize and sink in 600 meters of water. 389 people survived the incident. The mother of the feminist movement died Saturday. Betty Friedan, whose 1963 bestseller, The Feminine Mystique, sparked a movement toward equal rights for women, lost consciousness Saturday at her home. Heart failure was blamed for her death. Betty Friedan was 85 years old. For Fourth Estate Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Sometimes I sit down and try to figure some people out. Why does anybody think that Fox News is really fair and balanced? Why do people give lots of money to Pat Robertson? Why do some people think that who wins the Super Bowl is more important than who's going to sit on the Supreme Court? I mean, I like football as much as the next guy, but let's get real here. And every time I try to think this through, I always come to the same conclusion. That these are just simple people who don't know or care about anything that goes on outside their own little worlds. You know, morons. And the Republicans, they play them like a banjo. They're not just counting on people being morons, they're banking on it. After all, people who are too stupid to know they're being scammed make the best targets. But as clever as the Republicans think they are, they can be just as moronic as their victims. If they were really smart, they'd be satisfied with a little less just to keep the scam going. But that never happens. They always wind up going too far and it all comes crashing down. And when it falls on all of us, whether we're scammers, victims, or just innocent bystanders. Of course, people have every right to be morons if they want to be. There's no law against it. But the difference between a liberal like me and the Republican scam artists running the country now is that I want them to be happy, prosperous morons. The Republicans want them to be poor, scared ones. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Head on. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
My word, kids, it's a live show. Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio, people. I didn't think I was going to be here. Bruce isn't here yet, but we're going to get him on. Ah, can you believe it? We had a massive computer failure here last night. I lost an entire three-hour show. So Bob Kincaid is producing the show for us over in West Virginia. I cannot believe the effort that he and Ben Birch put in today to make sure that I got on air. Because I was losing my mind, and I don't know if the NSA decided to get into my computer or what, but the entire three-hour show is gone, interviews and all. But we move on to live another day, so I'm not concerned. I hope everybody's doing really well. Guess what? You can call in and talk to me today. The call-in line is 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. And we're looking about 8 minutes after the hour, and hey, getting my head around this whole thing has been, what can you say? This is the first time we've talked to y'all since the filibuster, or the lack thereof, depending on your point of view. And, you know, most of our listeners would have been involved with some of the filibuster that the Young Turks put on for everybody last weekend. And, I mean, we started on Friday with no talk of a filibuster, and by the time we got to Monday, we had 25 senators in support. So I was upset. I was angry. I was losing my mind on the morning of the day after. But I've got it back together now, kids, and I realize that we got to move on because we started something. We found out who's going to listen and who's not, you know? And what can you say? We know who the Democrats are now. We know who respects and understands what democracy is supposed to be all about, you know? And what can you say about guys like Ted Kennedy? Like, you know, I mean, Kerry got twisted a bit into it, but, you know, the guy at least stood by these words. You know, I personally am still angry with him for not counting every vote when he said that he would. But I was particularly fond of the fact that Teddy Kennedy went and looked for his own words and said, hey, man, you said you were, they put one of these wackos up, you were going to filibuster, eh? And when he saw his own words, he said, well, there you go. I guess I gotta. And so he made the phone call. And that was the start. And so, you know, if it hadn't been for that catalyst, we wouldn't have gotten to where we are. And, you know, I don't know how I can reiterate this enough, because I almost felt like I was going to have my own personal collapse. And if it weren't for this great community that we have, I probably would have lost my mind, you know. And I just really appreciate how everybody came together. I mean, that Tom Hartman chat room was just going off the scales. I mean, it was going so fast you couldn't even follow what was going on. So, you know, we need to move on. We need to clear our heads, turn that anger and frustration into something truly positive that we can move forward on. And we have our Judas list now. You know, starting with the two members, and I use the Australian version of member, from West Virginia, who, you know, couldn't spot, you know, trying to save democracy if he tried because he can't see through his bank account. But moving on. One of the things that we're going to miss out on tonight, and I'll have to reschedule it, was I had Anthony Lowenstein in the other day, and this gentleman has a grasp on the Middle East like no one I know, and he has a book coming out in July, August, which he believes is going to ruffle a few feathers on the subject. And we had a great conversation, and I wasn't able to get him set up to be able to get on the phone with y'all today, but we will get him back in for next week, because his take on this seems to be able to strip away the emotion, and it's the thing that poisons the argument about the Middle East. And I just really think you all will appreciate that. And a little bit later in the show, we have we were able to resurrect parts of the interviews that we had with two members of the Greensboro 7 who were arrested during the World Can't Wait rallies down there. So we will get to some of that a little bit later in the show. And wow, I think I'm finally settling into a concept of doing this thing live, folks. I've been jumping out of my skin here. So we're hoping that sometime early on in the game here, Bruce is going to rock up and we're going to get him on the phone and actually find out what happened in D.C. because he's actually driving as we speak, as you listen to me. He's on his way home. He'd been down at the World Can't Wait rally here down in D.C., and hopefully the numbers turned out to be huge, because as those of us that pay attention to what's going on, you know, we're definitely at a crossroads here, people. So please, you know, get on the horn, get on the line. The number to ring the show is 304-658-3333. You can email me at johnjon@4thestateradio.com, and send us your thoughts. I'd like to hear what y'all were doing during that filibuster or the filibuster. What was your reaction when the vote came down? I mean, you know, I listened to the vote, you know, live, and you know, I hear Biden wait to give his vote once it kind of looked like all, you know, the Republicans had it in the can. So, you all know my opinions on Biden, but he did come out with the rest of them, so we have to support him there. I mean, it's such a tough call for all of us. You know, sometimes it feels like, you know, the Democrats, you know, a good portion of them aren't listening. And you want, you know, you want to go and start a third party. And I've always been a big fan of that. But some of the some of the discussions I've been hearing about holding off on the third party idea is starting to make a little bit of sense to me. Because, you know, one of the inherent flaws of our American system is the fact that a third party always pulls votes away from the major party that it's most closely aligned. So, you know, I think it's a matter of I like Tom Hartman's idea about, you know, going with running more progressive candidates in local primaries, you know, and pushing them. And if you can get them on the ballot, great. If not, then, you know, back the incumbent. So we're just about at the end of this first segment of the first live show, folks. Please get on the phone, 304-658-3333. Give us a call. We'll I want to get you all on air, and I can't wait until Bruce rocks up. Maybe we can even get some of the arrestees on the phone at some point. If you all are in the chat room and you're getting this that we lost the show, ring in, please. I'd love to talk to you on air. Maybe we can even you know, field some calls from some of our listeners. So I do believe we're getting up on the end of things here as Bob sends me my directions through our little chat window here. I'm hearing some Alex in Chains. All right, everybody. It's looking like it's about 16 minutes past the hour. And we'll come back. Hopefully we'll have some of your phone calls. We'll talk about some of the big stories of the day. And I love you all for being here. See you soon. This is John. This is For the State Radio.
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Franti. Let us see an LV in the place. Gone International with Sly and Robbie on the track. Drums and bass. We getting wild.
All right, everybody, we finally got liftoff on Calming Down, okay? I saw y'all making comment in the chat room there thinking that I was going to lift a car. Anyway, I'm better now. It was all that pent-up energy, wondering if this was all going to fire off, even though we thought it would. I do believe we have our first caller on the line. Bob, can we pop Arbit Ender through? Is that possible? And... who do we have? Hello, who do I have?
This is Arbitender.
Hello there.
Guy, how you doing?
I'm doing much better now that we're finally launched. How are you?
Very well, thank you. All things considered, very well. I'm calling from Covina, California, and I'm really turned on to, finally being able to tune in all these different really good shows that are going on in internet radio right now.
We love doing this kind of stuff, and I know that there's other people that have just felt the need, you know, if the mainstream media is not going to fill the hole, then the people need to.
Well, I got turned on to it through that Young Turks deal with the filibuster business, and gosh, there's a lot of good material out there. And I wanted to ask a question. As a result of tuning into this, this business, it's come to my attention, this whole business about... Pun Plamondon, and I had never heard that name before, and I don't know how much you know about it, but
say it again. I couldn't quite make out what you said. Say it again.
The whole business about Pun Plamondon.
Oh, I've been seeing stuff about this in the chat room and I have to say to apologize to you because you sent me all the links. I have yet to get to read through all this. This all had to do with Nixon, did it not?
Well, I guess it actually did, but I'll tell you, I was a little kid when this happened, so I didn't really know, you know, really all that much about Nixon, actually, until I was really an adult. But here's the thing. It is connected to Nixon. He was in prison, or in jail anyway, being indicted for some type of CIA bombing, and there was a wiretap of the guy. So there was this huge wiretap lawsuit that went all the way to the Supreme Court. And as it turned out, the Supreme Court case was decided on, okay, dig this, it was decided on Friday, June 19th, 1972, which was the Friday immediately before the Saturday when the Watergate guys were found at the Watergate Hotel. And it was apparently the reason that the Watergate guys were at the Watergate Hotel was because of this decision that had happened on the Friday. The Supreme Court had decided that warrantless wiretaps were illegal. And there was a huge amount what the judges say in the decision process.
If I'm following you correctly, you're saying that because the decision came down that the wiretaps were illegal, they decided to go in physically to go and get the information that they wanted. Am I following you correctly?
The guys at the Watergate Hotel went to remove bugs from the Watergate Hotel that they had placed in the Watergate Hotel so that they
could... Oh, okay. I follow you. So because of the decision, they were going to go cover the tracks.
They were going to remove the bugs. See, and I think that's what's on right now. I think that is what is shaking right now.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And this whole thing is so reminiscent of what went on with Nixon. I mean, now everywhere you've heard and seen the clip, you know, when the president does it, that means it is not illegal, you know. And so, I mean, we are seeing this same exact Nixon-esque gameplay. And what I do find interesting is it just constantly reinforces what I know myself and many other people have the opinion, you know, we're seeing people from the Nixon era in power now, and we saw them in the administration during Reagan. So, you know,
right.
they never gave up.
Right, it's the same people too. Yeah, that's.
Oh yeah.
See, the, okay, now check it out. People should look this up. It's United States versus United States District Court, 407 U.S. 297 in 1972. People should go read this decision because there was some astonishing language put forward by the, by the way, 8-0 decision on this. No warrantless
arrest.
This case has already been decided. It's as though the case that Alberto Gonzalez is going to be fighting, all the text is already done. It's already been said. And they're, like so many other things, they're acting as though it didn't get said. It's like this erasure of history. Nope, nope, sorry, we never said that. And you know what? I never heard Plamondon in school. Never heard of the guy. Never.
I never heard of him either. And I know you were firing this at me, you know, all over the past few days, and due with everything that went down on this end, I have, because I wanted to give it a serious look, you know, I didn't want to just give it the scan. So I apologize to you for that, but I'm glad that you rang up to bring this up, because, I mean, we've seen, I said this to Bruce last week, you know, I've seen this Brady Bunch episode before, you know, we know that we have established law that says that this is all garbage. And now, just in the next segment, we're actually going to have some of the interview that Bruce and I did in the Lost Show with the kids that got arrested. And I think that this all still plays, because I'm really, really afraid that, you know, we're gonna see another Kent State at some point.
I would not be surprised by that one iota.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what went down in North Carolina this week. It could have gone there. I think.
I think $350 billion to Kellogg Brown and Root to build detention centers in the middle of the United States. For what, I ask you? For what?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's the beginning of our own, you know, detention centers. And you know, free speech is starting to become an illegal thing in America.
I expect to be vaporized at any moment. Truly.
I agree with you, and you know, some people disagree with me, but I sometimes wonder if it's going to absolutely take, you know, a revolution. You know, and we got about 2 minutes left in this segment, and you know, we're really at a crossroads, and I can feel the anger. And this is one of the things that Bruce did tell me about the rallies during the State of the Union. He said people are mad. They're really angry at this administration.
I'm really angry. Can I read this Supreme Court decision? There's like just three points they made.
Okay, you got about 60 seconds left, I think.
I'm a quick reader. The Supreme Court held in unison on Friday, June 19th, 1972, that Section 2511(3) is merely a disclaimer of congressional intent to define presidential powers in matters affecting national security and is not a grant of authority to conduct warrantless national security surveillances. The Fourth Amendment, which shields private speech from unreasonable surveillance, requires prior judicial approval for the type of domestic security surveillance involved in this case. The government's duty to safeguard domestic security must...
All right, hold that there. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off because we are just right about out of time. Thanks for calling in, and I'll tell you what, we will get the links to this that you sent me on our website so everybody can go and get it from there as well.
Right on, pal.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. First live caller, folks, it's 28 past the hour, and this is for the State Radio, and we'll see you on the other side of this break.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to say.
Once upon a time, in a small cottage, lived a boy named Chuck. One day, Chuck heard a knock from inside the wall.
Who is it?
He cried, for Chuck cried rather easily.
It is I, the energy hog, over here,
said a voice. Now, an energy hog is what you have when people waste energy. Chuck ran to tell his family.
There's a hog in our house!
Exclaimed Chuck.
That's no way to talk about your Aunt Melba,
said his mother, and sent him to his room.
That does it,
said Chuck. He raced to his computer and logged onto energyhog.org.
I'll just have to get rid of it myself.
At energyhog.org, Chuck played cool games and learned to use energy wisely. He learned that by switching to better light bulbs, he had the power to rid the cottage of the evil energy hog forever.
I'm leaving, but I shall return,
vowed the hog.
Don't count on it, bacon breath,
vowed Chuck. And the moral of the story is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org, or a switch in time, save swine.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay. Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Thanks to Arbiter for ringing in about the Nixon story, and we'll have all the links available for that on the website after the show is over. I know it's a very, very minimalistic post up there at the moment, guys, but things are a little bit pressured. Anyway, as usual, we're chatting at the Tom Hartman chat room, and you get there at tomhartman.com, any way you spell it. We're blogging at fourthestateradio.com. And before we get into the interview, we got a little bit of housekeeping to do, and our great friend Ben Birch, who runs our stream, does our archiving, and has that massive 5 million hours of radio archived on his site, is having his funding drive at the moment, and I know things have gone off to a pretty good start, but he's got a little ways to go, and if you like our independent media that we have to offer, you know, I mean, we're in great company over there. Bob Kincaid, my wondrous producer in West Virginia, has got his show there. Malloy, Hartman, you guys know them all. Stop by, throw Ben a bone, because he never sends a bill, and the system always works like a beauty. And he really worked hard to make this very broadcast happen today, and I thank him for it. So, anyway, getting on to that. Oh, one more bit of housekeeping.
Thank you, John.
Oh, is that Bruce? Whoa.
No, dude.
No, that was just a flipping audio. Oh, that's okay.
That's
oh, man, there was a ghost. It was the ghost of Bruce. We also had a donation to our listener-supported show this week, and you know who you are, and we appreciate everything that we can get, and I think we could use some more, because it looks like John could use some gear. But anyway, don't forget, you can call into the show. The number is 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. We'll get you on the line. I really want to hear what you got up to, you know, contacting your reps for the filibuster. You know, the reaction you had. How were you treated when you rang up? You know, we had Mary on a couple weeks ago, and she just, you know, spent about an hour and a half and contacted virtually every representative you could name. And, you know, if just 5% of us had gotten that involved, can you just imagine what the traffic was like, you know, in people's emails, fax machines? You know, I can just imagine, and by the time the weekend was over, we were hearing, you know, this voicemail shut down, that email box is blocked off, and, you know. So, I mean, we obviously burned up the wires, which we're going to have to do it more next time. I mean, we have no other choice. Our democracy is at stake here. So, you know, I guess it's time we should get into these interviews, because this was pretty big. Now, as you all know, World Can't Wait had the counter the State of the Union protests going on in some 70 cities, I believe, across the United States, and there were thousands out. And Bruce was telling us, you know, he was telling me on the phone the other day that, you know, they were expecting 20, 30 people, maybe 60, and they ended up with a couple of hundred, and they basically took over downtown Greensboro. And, you know, all seemed fine and dandy until. So, Bob, if you're ready to run that interview, why don't you go and run the first part of that? And this is Ken, a guy who was really, 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 he got beaten by a guy that wouldn't identify himself as a cop. Go ahead and roll that, Bob.
Thank you, John. Hey, this is Bruce, everybody. Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. I do have a special guest with us. And our special guest is straight from here in Greensboro, locally, and the gentleman who is with us is named Kenneth. And welcome to Fourth Estate Radio, Kenneth.
Thank you very much.
Ken was involved in our State of the Union address, World Can't Wait demonstration that occurred here in Greensboro this past Tuesday. And Ken and some others, but I'm going to let him tell his story, but Ken and some others were arrested for basically defending our rights to not being surveilled. Ken, why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened, and we'll do some questions.
All right. I'll give you a very brief summary of the beginning of it all. Actually, most of the parade. We left, gathered at a specific store downtown Greensboro, around 200 people would be my guess of how many people were actually there, and took to the streets of downtown Greensboro and had a very festive, noisy, very peaceful, with no trouble, parade around the streets of downtown Greensboro. We took a few extra turns here and there just to make it a little different. There was no specific route we were set to take, so it was fun, it was interesting, and it was for a very good cause. Everybody was out there, you know, to get a positive message out there and to not cause any trouble, because the only thing the trouble is going to do, like we all know, it's going to make the news and it's going to drown out everything else, everything besides Bush. We ended up back where the parade started, and everyone was gathered out in front in the street, on the sidewalks, having a good time. There was no traffic. Nobody was holding anything up, and drums were being played. People were singing. People were dancing. People were socializing, and you're trying to enjoy the rest of the evening after a successful parade. However, towards the last quarter of the parade, the police presence grew probably threefold from the beginning of the parade, where there were maybe two bicycle cops. A few minutes into this, approximately 5 or 10 minutes, happened to notice a very suspicious man in street clothes, and he was walking over towards where the main parking lot was for the event attendees. As soon as we noticed him, we realized that he had a camera with him. He began to film the license tags of every single car in the parking lot within 1 to 2 feet from the cars. At that moment, it was pointed out to a few of us what was going on. A few of us walked in that general direction and asked the man what he was doing, why he was doing it, and if he was a police officer. He did not answer any of the questions and refused to do so. He continued to film the cars. It was a very large, or, you know, a road full of cars, so this took several minutes. And as he progressed, we walked in that direction as well and continued to ask him why he was filming these license tags and if he was a police officer. There was no answer still. At that point, some of us realized that, yes, we need to make sure that this doesn't continue. He hasn't identified himself yet. This could be a severe threat to anybody who is in attendance. We didn't know why he was filming the cars. He could stalk us. We all know the potential scenarios that could come from this. So to prevent this, we actually just put our bodies in front of the license tags of the cars and blocked him from being able to film.
Ken, so you actually physically got in between the police officer, which you didn't know was a police officer at the time.
Correct.
And the vehicles to block him from filming the license tags. I'm getting that right?
Yes, sir. The cars that we got to, he was able to get three or four cars before we got to the last ones that we were able to keep him from filming.
Now, what was his reaction to you getting in between him and the cars?
Bruce, I'm going to use, I could either beep it out or I'm going to have to say have profanity here if I'm going to give you a direct quote.
Go for it.
The officer said, you need to move out of my way before I knock you the fuck out. What turned out to be an officer. We did not know he was an officer until all seven of us were handcuffed and in the back of the van. What happened was, and what we believed to have happened, was that he didn't even have the badge on him and had to go get it. We were all in the back of the van. Less than a minute before we left, he walks up to the back of the van, and he's like, here's my Huffman badge. Direct quote. Just in spite of us, he knew what he did. He knew, I mean, just tried to set us up. Yes, it's amazing how many times this guy's involved in this one night. If you would like me to, I'll go ahead from this point and finish out the scenario.
Sure, sure.
Of everything that unfolded up until we went to arrested and taken to jail.
Hey, Bob, if you want to pause that there, and we'll come back to it when we return from the break, because we're about to run out of time here, aren't we? And sorry about that. You know, it's a little bit of long distance production here, but I didn't want to run out there because he's got a couple more minutes to go. And are you hearing what went down here? Okay, are you hearing what happened? Okay, you have a guy refusing to show his ID when being asked who he is, filming the license tags of all the cars of everyone there who was involved in the march. And when they got in between the camera and the license plates, he started to shoulder into them. Later on, you'll hear from a young lady who was involved and was also arrested. Now, she was not treated all that harshly. Now, I got to tell you one thing that he hasn't even released yet. When they were taken in for processing, they were never read their rights, but yet they were charged. You tell me how this works, people. Is this America? Is this the United States that we grew up in? That we were taught about? Well, we're going to come back to the rest of this bit of interview in just a couple minutes. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. I'm John Fox. I don't know what time it is, and we'll see you on the other side of this break.
One voice. It can get the point across, but it only carries so far. Add a voice. It's richer, louder, but that has limits too. Add a third voice. It's even more powerful. Add another, and another, and many, many more, and we are stronger than ever. That's the power of a community coalition. They help community groups. Faith groups, civic organizations, PTAs, employers, and many others in your community organize their resources and focus them where they're needed most, like fighting to keep kids away from drugs. Ask a group that you belong to if they should belong to a community coalition. It's easy to get involved. Visit helpyourcommunity.org and they'll tell you exactly how your group can help. That's helpyourcommunity.org, because you get more
when we get together.
Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. 1 minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Mrs. Deer, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what'd you come up with?
We're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
A little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
Pablo Escobar, trained at the School of the Americas. Another day making hay up in Hollywood.
Everybody, welcome back to Fourth State Radio, and thank you to Screaming Jets for bringing us back in. That'd be the Screaming Jets. You can get to them at screamingjets.com.au. They are Australia's last and greatest real rock and roll band. But anyway, a little song about Pablo Escobar. Anyway, welcome back, folks, to this first live version, and I see my buddy Bruce Birch has just popped into the chat room, and if he would get on the private chat with Bob, he can join me on the show. So welcome back, everybody. Before we get back to the other part, continuing on the interview, I just got an email from Alan the Chunker Mate, so I will get to you there in a second because I got something to say on that. And you know, this thing that went down, I can't wait, you know, for Bruce to get on the line because he can tell us more about it. But, you know, you're seeing young people out taking the streets as they should do to speak their minds. And they're being treated like, not treated, but I mean, they're just being denied every right that we've been told. I mean, you know, where was the Miranda decision involved in all this? I mean, I just don't get it. But, you know, hey, we're living in a time of no accountability, and I think it's because we let them get away with it for so long, and they're forgetting how to come back and, you know, listen to us again. You know, we the people, those that actually run this government, you know. But they've forgotten. So, Bob, why don't we if you're ready to roll that interview from where we left off, we'll hear about how things progressed.
Turned out an officer that. Very, very suspicious man who has a camera, still has the camera on at this point, comes and shoulders one of the guys away from the car. And that is right after that, the direct quote that I gave you earlier about getting out of the way and not in those words. At that point, he moved on to the next car. And we're at this point, everyone there is asking him, are you a police officer? Are you a police officer? Because at that point, obviously, different stances will be taken, different considerations will be made, and perhaps we wouldn't be as aggressive in preventing the filmmaking because we understand the consequences. At that point, he moved to the next guy, shouldered him out of the way. I'm at the third car. He's on his way to me, shoulders past me, gets past me. I turn to walk away to prevent a situation. He looks back at me, comes towards me, grabs the sweatshirt off my back, reaches over my back, pulls the sweatshirt over my head, and just wails on me at least 2 to 3 hits. I had to back out of the sweatshirt while it's still in his hand. By the time I was able to look up at him, he had thrown my sweatshirt on the ground, pulled a Glock waistband, and had it sideways in my face like you would see in a thug movie. Just like a gangster. Still no identification, still not a cop. We are begging him to tell us who he is and whether or not he's a police officer. He has the gun in my face. At this point, he points the gun at everybody around us. From this point, everyone tries to flee, tries to get away from the gun. We don't know who this guy is. He could shoot any one of us. There is no reason for us to believe that we are in a safe situation for where we can't be shot. At this point, the police officers surrounding the area storm everyone there. Tackles are made. We're grounded on the pavement. We're handcuffed. We're not told we're under arrest. We're not told why they're handcuffing us. We're never read our rights the entire night. Still haven't been read our rights.
Wow.
He was, at that point, still not a police officer. He was not a police officer until we were in the back of the van, and he came back up to show us that here's my fucking badge in his exact words.
Okay, so when you went down... who's the terrorist here, right?
Exactly.
I mean, come on. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but in my view, that's domestic terrorism.
Exactly. This guy did not behave as even the most the most violent cops and the most unruly cops. This guy behaved in a manner far worse than you can imagine. It was it was just unbelievable to find out that this guy was a police officer and treated us in this manner. I mean, he punched me in the head repetitively. He had the gun sideways in my face, pointed at everybody else. And when the other officers came, every officer had their gun drawn, and it was the most scary moment I've witnessed myself. And there were guns waving. They were frantic. They were not in control. They were yelling obscenities. A trigger could have been pulled at any moment just out of their terror of themselves. They created this situation and then blamed us for it.
I want to ask you about that just real quickly. You know, what was the energy like prior to you seeing this guy doing the filming?
Just the same tone that the entire parade took. We came back. It was everybody just out and about enjoying the fact that we had a successful march downtown. There was quite a bit of publicity, good publicity, and, you know, we were looking forward to...
Okay. We'll be right back. This is Bruce Spurge with Fourth Estate Radio, and we're talking with Ken from World Can't Wait. We'll be right back.
All right, mate, we can pause it right there, and guess who? Yeah, so we're going to have Bruce on pretty soon, and are you hearing this? Are you hearing this? I mean, come on. What kind of a place are we living in where a cop can just brandish a firearm with, you know, at innocent citizens? You know, they haven't been charged, they haven't been threatening, they haven't done anything but protect themselves. You know? I mean, come on. I mean, I'm way over here on the other side of the planet from all y'all, and, you know, man, you know, I'm scared. I'm really, really, really scared for you. You know, and sometimes I wish I was there so I could be on the streets with you. But, you know, I'm not. So here I am, and I guess this is where I'm supposed to be. You know, if I'm supposed to be chiming back to you guys, you know, maybe I'll be the last one on air if we don't do something about this fast. You know, I mean, I'm terrified. You know, so I'm gonna mess with my microphone stand here for a second so I can get to my email. Hold on, clunky, 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 and I want to get to this email here from one of our friends in the Tom Hartman chat room here. So, Alan the Trucker, as I bend into an S shape, sent me this email here saying, here we go. I was in a debate in a bar room over politics in Atlanta about a year ago, and after we finally sorry. After we finally calmed down, I started talking to an Australian who overheard the debate, and he told me that most Australians believe more like conservatives in the USA. I'm still hoping that he was not telling the truth, Alan the Trucker. Well, thank you for that, man. And, yeah, in a way he's right. In a scary way he's right, but in one way he's wrong. There's been a recent influence by the conservative side here, and I think it's purely just because Johnny Howard is you know very much in bed with George W. Bush, and I've got stuff about the Australian Wheat Board to talk about a little bit later, and you know Australia is very disconnected. I mean, it's a little island continent, you know. And it's really isolated. We have five small media outlets that you know cover you know this country that's basically the size you know the size of the United States, but it's only got 22 million people here, right? And I don't know. It's changing. We finally have our first mega church here, you know. This kind of thing is starting to seep in. And we're seeing the winner take all, destroy your opponent's style of politics in the last few years. And most Australians don't realize it, but electronic voting machines are going to be trialed in their next federal election. And I don't necessarily trust the results from the last one, because I don't know anyone myself that voted for Mr. Howard. So, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you about the Australians. However, this thing that's going on with the Australian Wheat Board is starting to open up their eyes a little bit. And John Howard is running very, very, very scared, and I think he should, because the single largest user of oil for food was the Australian Wheat Board, and they funneled $300 million straight into Saddam's coffers during sanctions. So. Don't forget, you can ring in and talk to us. Talk to me. And Bruce is going to join me fairly soon, I think. The number to ring in is 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. We're chatting in the Tom Hartman chat room as per usual. Come in and say hi. These are some of the greatest people you'll ever chat with. Hi, all. And we're blogging at fourthestateradio.com. And, you know, we gotta fight for this thing. Or else we're buggered. You know, I know most of you that listen to us and, you know, already understand this. But, I mean, it's time to get off the pot, people, because we've already actually lost control of the democracy, you know, and we have to try and grab the reins before we go into a complete tailspin. You know, we're on the way. And it just... Sometimes I want to weep. I'm so scared, I have to say. I am just, you know, I know all of you speak your mind. You try and do the right thing, but that seems to not be a guarantee of having your rights intact now, does it? So, you know, we're going to be coming up on the end of this first hour of the first live show. I just can't believe it. And big applause to Bob Kincaid for playing my producer today, and I think he's going to be our producer for the future. And so ring us, 304-658-3333, and we'll get you on the line, emailing me at John, J-O-N, at fourthestateradio.com. Don't forget, White Rose is having their fundraiser, and throw Ben a bone. Because you're listening to his very work right now. We're being carried on him right now. So anyway, hopefully we'll have Bruce Birch in when we come back. It's coming up on 58 past the hour. I'm John Fox. I love you all. We'll see you on the other side.
Reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Fourth Estate Radio News. I'm Bob Kincaid. George W. Bush elaborated on his American Competitiveness Initiative Saturday in his weekly radio address. Bush said his initiative will help Americans the same way that ATMs helped Americans replace bank tellers and protect America against Chinese and Indian innovation. Bush used research and development as a rationale for more tax cuts.
Other countries offer permanent tax incentives for research and development. To keep America the world's leader in technology and innovation, Congress needs to make the tax credit for research and development permanent.
The federal budget deficit is approaching $500 billion. Tensions ran higher today in the war of words between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Western powers. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad Saturday ended Iran's voluntary cooperation with the UN's nuclear watchdog agency. The move comes in retaliation for Saturday's vote by the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency to report Iran's nuclear activities to the UN Security Council. 25,000 people lined up around the Capitol building in Atlanta Saturday, waiting to pay their last respects to Coretta Scott King, widow of slain civil rights pioneer Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Mrs. King's funeral will take place Tuesday in Atlanta. George W. Bush is expected to make remarks at the service. Coretta Scott King passed away Monday night. She was 78 years old. Muslim rioters angered over drawings of Mohammed in a Danish newspaper published last summer set fire Saturday to a building housing the Danish embassy in Damascus, Syria. Danish officials say everyone in the embassy is safe. In a related story, the Vatican said Saturday that freedom of speech, quote, cannot imply the right to offend, unquote, religion, but that, quote, violent actions of protest are deplorable, unquote. The comments came after requests to the Vatican to take a stand regarding, quote, recent offensive representations of religious sentiments of individuals and community, unquote. As many as 1,000 people are feared dead in the aftermath of a fire and the sinking of an Egyptian ferry traversing the waters of the Red Sea. An initial investigation showed a truck erupted in flames in the hold of the ship. The captain's attempts to turn the ship during heavy winds and high seas caused the vessel to capsize and sink in 600 meters of water. 389 people survived the incident. The mother of the feminist movement died Saturday. Betty Friedan, whose 1963 bestseller, The Feminine Mystique, sparked a movement toward equal rights for women, lost consciousness Saturday at her home. Heart failure was blamed for her death. Betty Friedan was 85 years old. For Fourth Estate Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid.
the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Earlier this week, activist Cindy Sheehan was arrested for wearing a T-shirt to the State of the Union address that announced the number of dead American soldiers and asked how many more. She was taken away in handcuffs and forced to sit in a cell. It's an experience she probably never thought she'd have when her son enlisted in the military. The wife of a Republican congressman was also tossed out for wearing an inflammatory shirt, though she wasn't arrested like Ms. Sheehan was. All her shirt said was something like, support the troops, but I guess to the paranoid maniacs running the government now, it was best not to take any chances. There are, and always have been, reasonable limits to free speech, but theoretically, those limits should only involve issues of words that can cause immediate danger. Yelling fire in a crowded theater is the example most commonly used. But when it comes to political dissent, the only apparent danger is to the people whose policies made the protests necessary in the first place. Years ago, long before film or television, protesters were simply beaten with clubs and dispersed. Now they're downplayed and ridiculed in the corporate media or locked up in free speech zones that look remarkably like prison camps. Free speech is an illusion, and just because I and millions of others haven't been arrested for speaking out is only because we're still powerless to change things. People who are perceived as real threats to the corporate status quo, the ones who can really make a difference, are often killed outright. I wish things were different, but that's just the way it is. At least for now. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night at headonradio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin. No falafel, no Oxycontin, just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day, head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night at headonradio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7.06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Sorry about that, John. Jump right in anytime you're ready.
Hey, guys, sorry. Thought I lost the connection there, but we just lost the track. No big deal.
No,
that was
mine,
the Screaming
man.
Jets. Thanks, Bob. Welcome back, everybody. It's probably getting on about 8 minutes past the hour. My name is John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio. I do believe very, very shortly we are going to have Mr. Bruce Birch come and make an appearance on the show. I can't wait. It feels kind of lonely, even though I do this show alone physically. We never actually have ever physically seen each other. But it's a great friendship that we've built all the same. And you can ring in, come and talk to us, 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. And we're chatting at TomHartman.com and blogging at Fourth Estate Radio. So, now, before we went off to the break, you know, where has freedom of speech gone? You know, where? I mean, what were these kids doing that was so threatening? And what gives any cop the right to brandish a firearm without identifying himself, showing no ID, and then coming and verbally abusing those same kids, you know? It's just insane. And, you know, so anyway, Bob's telling me that Bruce is here. Bruce, you there? You with me?
I am.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing, buddy, I'm very tired.
But I reckon you are.
I'm doing fantastic. I've had about two and a half hours of sleep in 48 hours, and but you know something, man? It's a good tired. It's a very good tired.
I reckon it is. And all right, everybody, if you're tuning into the show for the first time, this is my co-host who's usually with me, Mr. Bruce Birch from Greensboro, North Carolina, and he just pulled in the door from D.C.
Just came off the road.
So, hey, man, like, let me just leave it open to you. How did it go?
It was very damp. Okay. let's put it this way. It started raining about 2 hours outside of Washington, and it didn't stop until we got about 2 hours outside of Washington on the way back. So it was a very damp day, but the enthusiasm of the people that were there really was fantastic. I was really continually amazed that that everyone who showed up really stuck with it throughout the entire time. Given that it was pouring down rain at about 50 degrees.
Oh man! So. Well, I tell you what, you know, I'm proud to call you my friend because you're going down there, getting your feet on the ground, putting your body on the line to try and save our country before it goes down the proverbial we'll use the New Zealander shiter.
Yeah.
So you know, so what were the numbers like down there?
Well, I mean, you know, I think that the numbers, we estimated the number. It wasn't really a huge march, mainly because it was just one group. I mean, you know, usually when the large marches come to D.C., it's a huge coalition of a number of different groups. There was probably, I want to say, around 5,000 or so. You know, it's hard to say. We stretched basically from Constitution Avenue up to behind the White House there. And so about half of the distance around the circle there, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I've been there.
So, I mean, you know, it wasn't a huge march, but we made a lot of noise, made a lot of racket. And the neatest thing was that we encountered, it was really funny because when we came around Lafayette Park, there were about 12 freepers there. And they were up on their benches and they were yelling at us. And it was really cool because someone pointed out that, you know, that was actually down from the last time. So, I think it was down from like 15 to 12. So,
right on, man. Right on. Now, you were involved with what went on in Greensboro earlier in the week. I'm gonna pull you slightly off topic, but not really.
Sure.
And just, I don't know how much you caught, but I was able to resurrect your side of the interview with Keith. And what was the young girl's name?
That would be Kenneth and Marissa.
Right. Okay. Well, we heard Kenneth tell his you know, line together, you know, sorry, I'm reading chat and confusing words, saying what I'm reading. So when these kids, you know, you were there.
Yeah.
I mean, you were there. From what I understand, the police actually were being very, very friendly up until the point that the guy with the camera and the guy in the tracksuit rocked up. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, what happened? I mean, we did a bunch of flyering. We did an incredible amount of community organizing around this event, just going out and talking it up and talking it up and talking it up. And we figured, you know, at the most we would get 60 to 100 because it's a Tuesday night in the middle of the week. And lo and behold, we turned around and saw anywhere from 200 to 250 people showed up for this event Tuesday night in Little Greensboro, North Carolina. And so we were pleasantly surprised, but also taken by surprise as a result, as far as logistical concerns went. And
the
original plan was to have everyone march on the sidewalk so as to not need a permit. Okay. Well, when you have a crowd of 250 people and you're taken somewhat by surprise, things happen such as people spill out into the street. And that's what happened. And so as a result, the police basically ran a running roadblock for us and blocked off the street to allow us to take over downtown Greensboro. And they were very friendly about it, and they kept us safe, and they kept, you know, they escorted us all the way around through downtown and brought us back to our original location. And when we came back to the original location is where it started getting crazy, because all throughout the march there were a couple of cop cars, one in front, one in the rear, and a few on bicycles. But when we got back to the scene, it seemed as if they came out of nowhere. There was probably, you know, I saw a minimum of 40 cops for a crowd of 250 of people who were just having, you know, just out having a good time, beating on drums and chanting and doing the stuff that we do.
Right. Well, hey, man, you know what? We have the technology to take a call with the both of us. So if anyone wants to ring in and ask Bruce anything about what went down in D.C. or in Greensboro this week, ring us up at 304-658-3333, 304-658-3333. And while we wait for a call to come in, Bob, is there any chance of having that other interview segment with the young lady happen? Maybe we'll go to that for a minute, because I think the folks should really hear that. We're going to blow off this next break that was coming up anyway, because I have you on the line. you know,
yes,
this...
our new police state. This is Bruce Birch again with Fourth Estate Radio, and on the line we have Marissa, who is one of the WCW Greensboro 7 who were arrested this past Tuesday night in Greensboro, North Carolina, for daring to protect our civil liberties. Marissa, how are you tonight?
Great.
Fantastic. Just from your perspective, you know what? You know, we got sort of like the general understanding of the night's events and just the atmosphere there. But your view of what was going on when you saw the policeman recording, and then sort of if you could give us a little bit of a snapshot of that, and then you know to the police station.
Okay. Well, after the rally was coming to an end, we were all in front of the scene downtown, and a couple people noticed a suspicious-looking man down one of the side roads filming people's license plates. So a couple of us went down there to check out what was going on, and we saw that he was taking pictures of the license plates, and so we were trying to ask him who he was, what he was doing, and, you know, why he was filming. He had no reply the entire time, just continued to try to take photographs. So we began stepping in front of the vehicles to block his view from filming. After a while, he started telling people not to touch him and to get away from him, and started shouldering into people and instigating arguments. So we just, you know, backed up and continued to ask him who he was and if he was the police, to show his badge. And as Kenneth said earlier, he you know, just started wailing on Kenneth and pulled a gun out, and everybody started running at that point, and, you know, just trying to get away from this man, because at that point we knew that he must not be a police officer. He never identified himself, so all we knew was that this was some crazy man with a gun waving it around and was ready to shoot somebody.
It sounds like to me his fear took over.
Yes, definitely.
Which is not a good thing to have if you're a cop.
You're holding a gun, no.
No. So you got arrested. Why did you get arrested, Marissa?
I don't know. I have a public disturbance charge. All I did was stand there and watch the whole event unfold.
Oh, my gosh.
I did as much as all the other people that were involved. All they did was stand there and ask questions, and they have, you know, all these assaulting officer charges and whole list of charges that no one ever committed. No crimes were ever committed on our part.
Wow. So, okay, so they put you in the paddy wagon. Now, they put everybody in the same paddy wagon, or did they put some people in cars, or what happened?
No, we were all in the back of the paddy wagon.
Okay, and they took you downtown. Now, how did they treat you?
Not too bad downtown. The whole time, they never read us our rights. They never told us what we were charged with. We sat in the holding cells for 3 hours, right right by the sign that said no one can be held for more than 2 hours. But we were all there for 3.
That's just, oh, God. Right. Yeah, it does go against everything we've been ever taught, John. So, Marissa, again, you were there for 3 hours.
Right.
Now, did they actually come through and interrogate you at all, or what happened?
We were never asked what happened. We never gave a statement. We were never read our rights, never told us what we were being held for until everyone went and saw the magistrate. And that was the only time any of us knew what we were being there for. You know, we were all in handcuffs for, you know, no reason until they looked in books and on the internet for 2 hours, and then they were able to press charges on us. They had no idea what they were charging us for when they brought us to the police station. We had friends there to pick us up, and they could actually see the police officers through a glass window looking through books and on the internet.
Wow. So basically they Googled to see what your law, how you broke the law.
Right, exactly.
Okay, that makes no sense at all, does it, John?
Exactly. And
no, man.
Right. And when Kenneth when Kenneth went in front of the magistrate, he only had one charge against him, and the undercover police officer was there with the magistrate and said, "Oh no, he's got more," and Kenneth went back to the holding cell while they looked up more charges to add to his.
That's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
We have a Bruce? Ah, there. We might get him there.
Yeah,
now,
yeah, here.
I have mad echo come back on me, Bob. I'm not sure why.
You're
so,
golden.
Anyway.
John, you with
it just
me?
Went really severe. Anyway, Bruce, I just can't get over this. The fact that this could happen.
Well, I think... You know, I think what happened, and this is just a very quick sort of hindsight after having some time to think about it, and as I watched the events unfold, that it seemed as if, from the police standpoint, that they put specific actions in place to kick up the energy and the negative energy, if you will, of the event to a whole new level than where it was. The cops were there in riot gear. You know, the paddy wagon was around the corner.
They were ready for this.
By the time that they, you know, yeah, they were ready for us. And I think that they would have been damned happy to pull a lot of us and throw us all in jail. Now, you know, and including in this, now I want to make sure that this goes out there over the airwaves also, is that when those arrests were occurring, there was a whole, you know, the majority of the people were still out in the middle of the street drumming. They didn't know what was going on around the corner.
I remember asking you this when we actually did the interview and trying to deal with the delay at the minutes, driving me nuts. But anyway, I asked you why no one had any shots of this or film footage, but it was purely because it was off to the side from where the real action was going.
Right. And what happened was several of the activists that were arrested ran back into the crowd, at which time they, you know, the cops chased them into the crowd, tackled them, and basically, you know, roughed them up pretty bad right there in the middle of the crowd. Now, a lot of that we do have on tape. So there is
good.
There is tape of a couple of the arrests. But the one thing that I wanted to mention was when this was happening, apparently this policeman called for backup, and there was a car on the south side of this entire crowd that raced by the crowd, I mean just like within inches, running about 50 miles an hour to get around the corner, you know, to go arrest these 7 people. And you know, just to let everyone know, the fallout from this has been that we have had probably, I mean, any, you know, that we're aware of, you know, probably 2 or 3 dozen citizens who have written complaints to the city council to the police department. We are planning several demonstrations beginning even next Tuesday, perhaps.
Right.
To counteract all of this. So we are working hard here in Greensboro to make sure that this gets out of the public arena, John. And I'm getting chills talking about it because I believe very strongly that this is the flashpoint for domestic spying nationwide.
I'm with you, but I also think we're at this turning point in our democracy, or the lack of it at the moment. And you said that things were very, very tense. And this is why I was saying before that I'm scared for everybody. You know, I don't know what's going to come of this.
Well, John, I don't either. But you know something? And maybe this is just who I am as a person.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, if I go quietly into the cold dark night, I've not done my job, because my job is to make sure, at least for me, I'll be able to sleep at night. I'll sleep better at night knowing that I'm on a list and perhaps being surveilled than if I sit here in my house and do nothing and let my civil liberties go down the crapper.
I'm so with you. Do you remember what you said when we came back from one break in the Lost Show about your rights?
Yes, they can pry them. They can have them when they can pry them from my cold, dead hands, John.
And I think that's the entire point, man. I tell you what, why don't you try and get some sleep? Okay? Kick back. You've done so well.
Maybe I'll call back.
You know,
who knows?
Man. You know I love you, and watch you back, buddy, and we'll be doing this together next week.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Good night.
John, thank you, and keep up the good work, my friend.
Right on, man.
Okay.
Love you.
Bye.
All right, everybody. That was Mr. Bruce Birch. You know, he's on his feet on the ground. I'm taking my headphones. I don't hear the echo, so Bobby, you'll have to cue me in the chat. Anyway, you know, this is what it's about. We got to get our feet on the ground, or else the whole thing's gone. You know, I know of people that have set up, you know, their bail money, you know, with people to make sure that when the time comes when their rights are stripped, they're just, you know, that they at least have it in the bank. I mean, people are already preparing to go to jail, to go to prison for saving our democracy. And if there are people that should be heralded as heroes, it's all these people, right? The kids that we spoke to who were arrested. I mean, come on, you know, they're having guns in their faces. By the law and order, people that are supposed to be protecting and serving we people, okay? And I just don't know what it's going to take to turn it around. You know, the time I keep going back to our music. You know, the time has come today, and the time was yesterday. Starting to get really, really worried. I'm really, really, really worried that we are looking at that it has already gotten away from us. And that just means that we have to fight that much harder. And I believe I hear some music there, which means that we're going to a break. It's coming up on 28 minutes of the hour. Man, it was good to hear from Bruce. Boy rocks. We'll see you on the other side of this break on Fourth Estate Radio.
Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines. But there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Mrs. Deer, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you come up with?
Well, we're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
Little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off 2 indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who worked night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
All right, everybody, it's 33 past the hour. My name's John Fox, and welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. And where are we? We're in the middle of hour two. It's all kind of flying by really quickly. And a little bit of programming notation to do here, people. Coming next week, we're going to start a two... Well, it's going to start as a two-part thing. It'll probably go longer. We are going to have...
good friend of ours from Australia. I got him and Tom Hartman. So everybody say hi. And this gentleman's a lawyer. And he has been very, very hard on decoding Australian air legislation that just was passed here. Now, we're going to use that as a bit of a vehicle to try and decipher what's going on with the Patriot Act 2. Now, starting next week, we'll have a bit of a pre-recorded segment from Lori explaining the study guide. And we will have a study guide up on the fourthestateradio.com, which will have some downloads, documents. I still have to catch up on my end on Patriot 2. And so you can get your head around what's happening. And then we're going to actually have Lori on the line, on the show, to take some questions and also, explain the legal challenges aren't going. And I heard I was breaking up, so I'll pop that down a tad. And so he's been looking very, very hard into legal aspects of having our rights stripped away from us, because, as you know, we talk about the axis of iniquity here, what I reckon is the UK, the USA, and Australia getting together and playing the same game. So, and this is, since I've been here, watched this country from something unique, and there was some personality of that seemed cynical, never bought this kind of right politics, but I really have been surprised at how they've bought this thing hook, line, and sinker, and it's something to do with John Howard. I personally think the guy's a weasel. He sucks up to big money. Sound familiar? He's got lots of rich friends. I reported a few weeks ago that his own brother knocked down a whole bunch of indigenous trees being against the law, and he said, "Oh, I wasn't involved in that. I only approved the work." And it's this kind of, just denial of what's happening. And I don't know. This has been the last 10 days, is it now, since right before the filibuster, or the attempt thereof of a filibuster. It's been a roller coaster ride. And, every emotion, it almost felt like there was a death in the family, But, when one dies, another is born. So from there, we need to move on. Now, I think I should move into talking about Australia and the Australian wheat. Okay? And this is where I think a lot of this comes into play. Now, you'll remember a couple weeks ago, I was explaining that there's been all this kind of hearings about the fact that the Australian wheat, which is the formerly government-owned, now privatized, monopoly exporter for Australia. They were the only... I'm going to hold on that, because I believe I have a Spike online. What? Is that Spike?
Yeah, hey, Gonzo greetings down under, man.
Gonzo greetings, buddy.
How are you down there?
I'm doing really, really good. Aside from this unfortunate echo coming back at me, which I believe none of you can hear.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. So, Spike, what brings you calling in?
Well, actually, I wasn't hearing an echo, but for some reason, that's for a little bit there on the internet, you were kind of broken up, so I wasn't sure what you were even exactly what you were talking about there when I called up. But I saw a movie last night. I know this is kind of a little off topic, but it's a little on too, about the corruption of the powers that be.
Take me on a ride.
It's called Enron, the smartest guys in the room. It was actually basically produced by the guy who happens to also own the Dallas Mavericks and the HD Network, Mark Cuban. Unlike Trump, there's a guy who's really rich and actually does some good with his wealth. And,
oh, that's rare.
That's very rare. And that's why the media always likes to shun him and, find little things to go after him about, like he screams at the games of the basketball team he owns. you know, so they get like to calm down on that instead of the fact that, you know, he put out maybe one of the best things I've ever seen on this whole Enron scandal.
And really?
Yeah, it's a, it, if you can get your hands on this DVD down there, my friend, I'm telling you, this is almost.
Hey, man, that's what Amazon's for.
Yeah, yeah.
I tell you what, email me the title, and I will make sure I get it.
Okay, yeah, it's a Magnolia home entertainment film. As a matter of fact, this the same company that put out the Fastest Indian movie there about the motorcycle thing. But anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
I do believe I know it.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, this is the same movie company, and yeah, it's just a great, great film. I'm glad I picked it up the other day.
How did you hear about it?
I saw an interview actually with Mark Cuban, and he talked about it. And then also, I saw the band Pearl Jam back in the beginning of October, and Eddie Vedder went on stage and mentioned that they had literally watched that, I guess, in the either the green room or maybe in their motor coach or whatever on the way to the show, and they recommended it to everybody. And of course, I love Pearl Jam. You know, I agree with them politically, but when they come and play Philly, in Philadelphia, we party for like ridiculous amount of hours in the parking lot before, like, doors didn't open until 6 at night. We were partying at like noon in the parking lot. Like, we were drinking and doing all sorts of things you're legally not supposed to do for 6 hours leading up to that. So it might have fell on deaf ears a little bit, but it's a great, great documentary. I mean, and since it was done for the, you know, eight high definition stuff too, they kind of, they don't do it cheaply, but they jazz it up where they, when they talk about things going off a cliff, they show you someone on like a motorbike doing a jump off a ramp and then going down into like the Grand Canyon to kind of give it that drama. Because in a way, it's hard to make something like this a very interesting film because of, you know, it's about paperwork and numbers and things like this. But they did a great job at doing that, really adding new element to excite it. But on top of that, they had great interviews with people. I mean, you should see some of these traders that were responsible for this they showed. I mean, they had some great interviews, and they really go into telling you just where the money was going the whole time and all the stuff they were doing and connecting the dots. And, you know, it's really funny. I remember, thinking back now, I remember having a friend who wanted his stockbroker to buy into Enron in, like, 99, and his stockbroker wouldn't do it. And he was really infuriated. He's like, well, it's my money. Let me do whatever I want with it. And the stockbroker was trying to say to him, listen, this isn't a good business investment. I can't explain the company. That's the problem. And at the time, I didn't know the name. But then when I watched the film, I put it together. I said, oh, my Lord, that must have been Enron that he wanted to invest in, and you know, so-and-so wouldn't let him do it. And I even met once someone who worked in the business of energy trading, and these guys are worse than three-card Monte, if you ask me, because they try to make it sound like it's so legit, and really all it is three-card Monte, this whole energy trading scam.
I've never understood this idea of trading energy concepts, you know, and the Enron thing dates all the way back to UK in the 80s, and their water during Thatcher. That was the first Enron.
Yeah, I missed a little bit of that there. I'm not sure what happened.
Sorry.
No, I understand.
I have trouble with the echo, but I don't know if you remember, in the 80s, the UK had massive water problems. Hello? I mean, their whole water system was falling apart. That was the first Enron company.
Okay.
Back then, that was the first time that they tried this whole game.
Yeah, yeah. I'm too young to be familiar with that particular case, but I think I vaguely had heard about that too in reference.
Right. Well, hey man, I'm going to move on. Thank you for bringing about that, and I will post a link about that film. And thanks for joining us on Fourth Estate Radio. This delay is killing me.
Yeah, it's a little confusing on my end right now too.
Right on, man. Thanks so much.
All right, have a good one.
All right. I'm losing my headphones because I'm losing my mind with this delay. I don't know what's happened, but I think it's kind of out of our control at the moment. So hopefully this is cleared up a bit for everybody. Let's see. Enron. Wow. Haven't thought about Enron in a while, huh? Now, those trials were just getting ready to start last time I checked. And, you know, it's going to be interesting there. because, you know, I heard the tapes of the traitors, you know, ripping your auntie whatever pension. These are sick people. I mean, you know, any of us that have seen the corporation, you know, when they do the rundown, you know, if a corporation were a person and the way modern corporations act, you know, they'd be sociopaths. And, you know, this is just, you know, insane. And, you know, we've let control of everything go to corporations, rich people, lobbyists, and people who have no clue what it is to actually work for a living. I mean, in my opinion, oh man, I might get hammered. Own humble opinion. People that work in don't make anything. People who make money off of me, playing with air. It's not like, you know, guy who goes and, you know, does your muffler at the garage, you know. It's not the guy, you know, it's not the woman who's actually the nurse taking care of way too many patients in a hospital that doesn't have enough funding, trying to do their absolute best. And, I see a good friend is on the line, and I'm going to play just because I love him. Hey, Peter, you with us? Peter, do we have him?
John in Australia, how are you, buddy?
He's one of my favorite people in the world.
Oh, my goodness, it's Peter in Tallahassee. What are you going to do? I mean, you know, you just never know who's going to call you.
Hey, mate, you know how many times I'd be dead in the water without you?
Oh, dude, I love you guys. I'd do anything for you. I'd even maybe even, you know, put some... No, I can't say that. Lord.
I didn't know what you were going to say, and I'm not going to...
No, don't ask.
So, what's on your mind there, mate?
Well, I've been reading today about bank...
I lost you? Peter? I hear him not.
Okay, now do you hear
there
me?
There you
now?
Are.
Okay, good. That might have been my fault. I think I may have bumped the mute button or something. Sorry about that. But I've been reading today about the number of bankruptcies in England. And apparently it's going through the roof. The article I've read in The Guardian says that even 19-year-olds are filing bankruptcy and that cases are up 45% from last year. And there are 100,000 more cases expected in 06, and home repossessions are at the highest since the 1990s. It goes on and on and on and on. And, you know, I'm just wondering, is that happening in Australia, too? It looks like the whole damn thing's falling apart everywhere.
Well, I think it is, actually, because they don't have a bank charter here. And they basically can do whatever it is that they please. And they have a very, you know, bank-friendly government in here at the moment. And, you know, I think that they're going down the same road.
I see. Well, you know, this is not good. You know, as this continues to happen, there are going to be more and more angry people. You know, that in England, as it stands now, there are so many Muslims who are... The riots that happened not too long ago because they've been disenfranchised and stepped on and peed on for so many years. And, you know, college-educated people can barely get a job as a bellhop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just don't see it's right that you have to have a credit card to rent an apartment in most cities in America now.
Well, no, that's interesting. That's interesting. I guess I wasn't aware of that. It's been a while since I've rented an apartment, but you know, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me in the least, or at least a credit check and all that. It's true. You can't. It's becoming harder and harder to be down and out not down and out in the sense of being completely homeless and destitute, but. But anybody who's got any dings in their credit record or who has struggled with paying medical bills for crying out loud, It's getting harder for everybody. John, I've got to say, I'm so glad.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. You know, I remember when I was 18 and I went out and got my first apartment. You know, it was first and last month's rent, and one more month as you go. And if you fall behind, they, you know, use your than last.
Yeah. Well, I'm over 50 now, so I guess that puts me over the hill. But I got to say, I'm glad I'm not your age. I mean, I truly am. I'm glad I don't have to, I don't know how many more years of this I can take. It's just hell on earth to try to, every day to deal with this crap. And, you know, if I was in my teens or early 20s, God, and there was, I was hearing on the news today that more and more young people are declaring themselves to be conservative. What in the hell is that?
Well, I think that's wanting to be a part of the rich club, and they don't realize that they're being duped at all, you know, completely.
Well, if anything, younger folks should be liberal in the sense that they need to have their minds still open. They need to see things and know things and embrace things to decide what's true. And I mean, a closed mind at an early age is something that the society has encouraged, and it scares me, John.
It scares the daylights out of me. I just sit here sometimes and stare into space and just imagine. I'm going to be 37 in a couple of days here.
Happy birthday.
So, you know, I'm not new going out. But I'm trying to imagine being 18, you know, even 22, just getting out of have any references.
Yeah, it's got to be rough. The article that I was reading in The Guardian regarding bankruptcy, a lot of these people, the ones that are 19, are filing these bankruptcies because they've started college and either did or didn't work out, or in any case, the early 20s and 19s are having to file bankruptcy because of student loans that they're finding impossible to pay back.
And why are we making our kids go into debt just so they can educate themselves to become functional members of our society?
Well, John, all I can say is maybe it's the same reason that they're cutting off funding for Head Start. You know, a starving child without a balanced diet certainly learns well.
Hey, mate, I'm totally with you. I mean, I've worked in concert production my whole life, you know, and we know that you have to feed your crew if you want them to work. I mean, it's a very, very simple thing. And I remember when I worked for union, you know, stagehand companies, if it was more than 10 minutes walk to the nearest food and you had to be there before 9 a.m., there was catering there asking you how you would like your eggs before you had to start. And you had one very motivated crew.
Yeah. And the only other topic I have is what Bruce has been talking about in an article I've been posting in the chat room regarding the similar treatment to the World Can't Wait folks that's taking place in Cleveland. And, you know, the Bush administration's policy may not be overt persecution of anyone who disagrees with them. That's not their stated policy, but it is the understood policy. And it's exactly what happened in Hitler's Germany. You know, the stated policies may not necessarily have been to be that abusive. I mean, as time passed, we had the concentration camps, but that it evolved into that. But it was unspoken that, yeah, it was all right to beat the shit out of a Jew.
Tell me, okay, I missed this. What happened in Cleveland?
Well, in Cleveland, there was also mistreatment of the folks who in the world Can't Wait March. There was a woman who was putting up posters on the street. She was just stapling them to the telephone poles, the power poles, and basically she was assaulted by a police officer who said, and I quote, "Shut up or I will kill you. I'm sick of this anti-Bush shit." Yes, she was arrested.
Very nice.
Yes, she was arrested and her face shoved down into the concrete. She was taken to a mental institution, but at least to a psych facility to be evaluated. You know,
and that'll be on a record now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I'll email you the link. I'm sure you'd like to see it. But the you know, and that's really what, you know, keys my remark here. It seems to be universal. One police department at the next police department. It's an unspoken thing that, yeah, it's all right to knock the hell out of these bastards.
Chinese whispers.
Yeah.
Sounds like to me. Hey, man, thanks for ringing in. I have Alan on the other line, so
cool.
I'm going to let you go.
Cool.
Love talk you, buddy. Right. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
And do we have Alan there?
Yes, I'm sorry, but I think I was listening to a different rerun show. But
oh, no! Alan the Trucker, I read your email.
He did? Well, I hope you liked it. I was in a bar in Atlanta about a year ago, and I was in a debate about politics. It was a bad place to be in a debate about politics. And after it kind of calmed down, I talked to a guy who was there from Australia, and I couldn't believe it. He said that there's a lot of Australians who are conservative, and it just made me sick, if that's true. I hope it's not.
Well, they've worked hard to turn it that way. You know, I've always felt that Australia is somewhere 2 to 4 to 6 to 8 years behind American trends in politics and also pop culture, depending on the issue. And you can just see it over here. Most can predict the moves one ahead.
Yeah, I guess the main thing I'm concerned about is respect for minorities.
Well, it's a bit scary here. You've heard our reports about the riots that we've had down in Cronulla with the white supremacists here.
Oh, yeah, I saw that on the BBC. Yeah.
And it was pretty horrible. I have friends who work very hard in the alternative media down here, and they have shut down numerous racist websites. They've had their lives threatened, but they do real great work. And I mean, I've seen many a site that says this site has now been shut down due to leftist swill.
I guess the best thing to do to fight racism is to have a good education system, and I hope they have a good one there.
Yeah, we're getting more of that teaching to the test thing, and that bothers me. But you know, Australians are an interesting sort, I must say. I know they surprise me sometimes. Just when I think I have them nailed, they somehow pull out and do the right thing. Because Australia has two major national stands. The death penalty is never applied, and failing by the Japanese should be illegal. And they actually back Greenpeace, the right-wing government here, actually stands behind Greenpeace. So there are two things that I can always hold for.
Well, that sounds good.
We just recently had a thing with, you know, we have the Bali Nine. I don't know if you hear about these Australians that are in Bali and Indonesia with their lives on the line.
Uh-huh. No, I haven't heard about
and
that.
Now they got done for drugs and all these other things, and their death penalty offenses, and
though
the government's kind of powerless, they have said, regardless, no death penalty.
Well, that's good. No death penalty.
Yeah.
Well, I really liked it when George Bush went over to Australia and gave that speech at the time, and then he was heckled. I wish I could have been in the audience. That's when I wanted to move to Australia.
Yeah, well, the Australians are really good, and they don't like to pull punches. They really don't. But they're good people through and through. And I really hope that the signs that I'm seeing will be pulled back by what's coming out with the corruption between the oil for food scandal and everything. Hey, Alan, thanks for ringing up. I really appreciate you. We're going to a break. We'll have a little more news, another cup of Joe, and this is John Fox on Fourth Estate Radio, getting rid of my headphones, and we'll see you after the break.
child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to three lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
For the State Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid. George W. Bush elaborated on his American Competitiveness Initiative Saturday in his weekly radio address. Bush said his initiative will help Americans the same way that ATMs helped Americans replace bank tellers and protect America against Chinese and Indian innovation. Bush used research and development as a rationale for more tax cuts.
Other countries offer permanent tax incentives for research and development. To keep America the world's leader in technology and innovation, Congress needs to make the tax credit for research and development permanent.
The federal budget deficit is approaching $500 billion. Tensions ran higher today in the war of words between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Western powers. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad Saturday ended Iran's voluntary cooperation with the UN's nuclear watchdog agency. The move comes in retaliation for Saturday's vote by the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency to report Iran's nuclear activities to the UN Security Council. 25,000 people lined up around the Capitol building in Atlanta Saturday, waiting to pay their last respects to Coretta Scott King, widow of slain civil rights pioneer Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Mrs. King's funeral will take place Tuesday in Atlanta. George W. Bush is expected to make remarks at the service. Coretta Scott King passed away Monday night. She was 78 years old. Muslim rioters angered over drawings of Muhammad in a Danish newspaper published last summer set fire Saturday to a building housing the Danish embassy in Damascus, Syria. Danish officials say everyone in the embassy is safe. In a related story, the Vatican said Saturday that freedom of speech, quote, cannot imply the right to offend, unquote, religion, but quote, violent actions of protest are deplorable, unquote. The comments came after requests to the Vatican to take a stand regarding, quote, recent offensive representations of religious sentiments of individuals and community, unquote. As many as 1,000 people are feared dead in the aftermath of a fire and the sinking of an Egyptian ferry traversing the waters of the Red Sea. An initial investigation showed a truck erupted in flames in the hold of the ship. The captain's attempts to turn the ship during heavy winds and high seas caused the vessel to capsize and sink in 600 meters of water. 389 people survived the incident. The mother of the feminist movement died Saturday. Betty Friedan, whose 1963 bestseller, The Feminine Mystique, sparked a movement toward equal rights for women, lost consciousness Saturday at her home. Heart failure was blamed for her death. Betty Friedan was 85 years old. For Fourth Estate Radio News, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thank you, John. Hey, this is Bruce, everybody.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. 8 months ago, the Iranians elected a radical Islamic president. Last week, the Palestinians put into power a political party who wants Israel destroyed. In both cases, the Iranians and Palestinians were reacting to American foreign policy. Instead of being wimps and negotiating with people, we decided we had to show the world what a bunch of tough guys we were, and now everyone else has to elect their own tough guys to show they're not going to get pushed around. So we push them, and they push us, and who knows where it'll all lead. If the Iranians and Palestinians can feel free to spit in our faces a little, they can do so because by invading Iraq, we've shown the world that we're not so tough after all. I know some people are saying, and I used to believe it myself, that if we had only done the right thing in Iraq, helped rebuild their country and really make a better life for the Iraqis, things would be different. But you know what? If we had that much class, we would never have invaded Iraq in the first place. Frankly, I never expected much of anything from the corrupt, incompetent jerks we have running the country now. The only tool they have is a hammer, so every problem looks like a nail. And now we're all getting screwed. But give credit where credit's due. The Republicans, their corporatist allies, and their cronies in the so-called professional media have managed to accomplish something extraordinary. In just 5 short years, they've turned the greatest country in the world into a laughingstock. I'm sure they're all very proud. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Head on. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin. No falafel, no Oxycontin, just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day, head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night, headonradio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
This is Bruce Birch, and this is Bruce's Bruisin'. This week's Bruisin' is not directed at anyone, and yet is directed at everyone. This week we're going to talk about democracy, not the kind of tidy system of government that we all like to think is hallowed and is the aspiration of all the civilized world, but the ever-changing principle of Big D democracy. Big D democracy is the free-flowing exchange of non-oppressive ideas that create a lasting set of principled decision-making processes. We have seen of late a bully president who sees the Constitution as a quaint old document, a silly little piece of paper, perhaps. And there are those on the left who all of a sudden want to see this silly little piece of paper held up as a hallowed document, as a lasting symbol of all that is great and wondrous and free about America. But let us not ever forget that within that document, our African-American brothers and sisters were once compromised over as property, until an amendment came along to rectify that oppressive white supremacist decision. Did those people have a place at our Big D democracy table? No, they most certainly did not. And, interestingly enough, in the period following the Civil War, there were more African-American senators than there are even today, over 100 years later. Our society, despite our hallowed constitution, has denigrated into the very same type of society that befell Rome. Why? Because Big D democracy requires Big W work. It requires people to make unpopular stands, to say the things that need to be said that nobody wants to say. It requires that you raise your voice. It requires us to be active participants at all levels, lest we cede our governing to those interests that would control rather than govern, that would manipulate rather than explain, that would rule, censor, and dictate our actions as a people. And the choice is yours. Either you get Big D democracy, or something else that looks like it and yet is something else entirely. I hope you choose wisely. This is Bruce Birch for Fourth Estate Radio.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms.
All right, everybody, how we doing? Welcome back to Hour 3 of Fourth Estate Radio. Thank you, Mr. Bentley. People, welcome back. Sorry I had to dump out of the chat room. Seems as though it decided to cut off my little connection between us and the home studio. So that had to go away. So I'll join you all at the end of the show. And thanks to Peter and Alan for ringing in. And my delay's gone. Oh, hurrah! Thank you, Bob. Whatever you did, you rock. Well, kids, you know, here we are. It's the third hour. It's the first time we've done 3 hours. Actually, the second time, but you didn't get to hear the first time because, well, the NSA has it. what can I say, kids? We gotta take it back. And Bruce made some great points in this week's Bruising. You know, it's starting to look like a democracy. It's not a democracy anymore. It never really was a democracy. It was a representative government, was it not? You know. But anyway, we're losing our voice. We've lost our voice, kind of. You know, we have just a few 25 senators that actually remember what democracy is supposed to be about. You know, and sometimes I doubt their motivations, but hey, we do everything that we can. But unfortunately, I think we have to start doing more. You know, we have to seriously be watching each other's backs. I don't want to spook everyone, but I think everybody's spooked enough already. You know, we're all spooked up enough already. I just don't know what to tell everybody, except, you know, watch each other's back. You know, anyone who is close to my age, say their mid-30s or whatever, you know, remembers being one of the early children of the Reagan Revolution, as far as, you know, starting to see the effects of the Reagan Revolution on education and on, you know, corporate policy. And, you know, when I was a kid, I believed that there were welfare moms out there, you know, and it wasn't until I got into my 30s that I found out that the entire thing was a fabrication, you know? And the most well-intentioned sounding people, very, very often in this day and age, seem to be just about doing the exact opposite of whatever they say they're going to do. You know, it's opposite world. You know, I mean, we talk about this endlessly. You know, in the last show, Bruce and I were kind of going off about the State of the Union address. You know, and, you know, Bruce was actually out with his feet on the street at the time, so he wasn't hearing it, but, you know, at the time. But I was listening, you know, with Bob on his show, and I even rang up during the speech. And, you know, and I mean, right from, like, about the third line, he starts lying, you know? I mean, he starts lying, you know? And I think it was Peter that rang up, you know, saying about, you know, this guy saying, you know, I'm tired of all this anti-Bush. Well, you know what? If the facts are that the guy's lying to us, absolutely shredding every remnant of the freedoms, of the intentions of this experiment that was America, you know, I wasn't a politically active person until I left. I mean, how incredibly hypocritical is that? But yet I have to look past my own failures for, God, 3 decades. 3 decades. But I always knew something was wrong, even when I was 10 years old, and I had my very, very, very right-wing stepdad explain that the intent now to vote break down the ticket, no questions asked, in about 19. And I remember looking at this on an Easter and saying, my God, how can you possibly, you know, just not even think about it? Absolutely give up. Give up the thought process. But it seems like that is what these people want. They don't want the discussion. I mean, that's what the whole filibuster was about, was the fact that we weren't done talking about it yet. You know? Ted Kennedy, I'm sorry, he's becoming my hero all over again, you know? When I was trained to think that he was supposed to be the Antichrist. You know? And sometimes I think the lady doth protest too much. But it was Kennedy that one poked our former presidential candidate to stand up to his words, man. And then it was he on the Senate floor when the vote was coming down that says, I've been here a long time. I remember when we used to really filibuster. We don't filibuster anymore. It's because the discussion wasn't over. And this is the way that they get away with so much of this stuff, is because they stop the discussion. This is what I see going on down here. When the Howard government took over, well, not took over, but when they got reelected the last time, they got control of the Senate and the House, just like the Republicans did. And what was the first thing that they did, their first piece of business? We have a thing called, you know, question time here, right? Where we have the debate. The liberals, and remember that the liberals here are the right-wingers, okay? They gave themselves 2 extra questions in question time, took one away from the opposition, and gave a strangely large, disproportionate amount of votes to the one senator from the Family First Party, who is kind of the one guy who you'd say would be, you know, goes to the mega church, right? And when this party first popped up in this last election, I was concerned. I said, okay, here we come with the Christian right political movement. And what actually has been funny is that it's backfired on Howard a couple of times, because they've actually been very Australian and stuck with what was right for families, because they call themselves Family First. But same tactics. Limit the discussion. Never face the facts. Live in denial. Espouse lies. Hatred. And pay. And make it pay system. I mean, we have a thing here as well now. And I don't know if the Australians really realize how much and how many people are hounding the representatives here to vote against the people. You know? I just don't know, you know, how this is going to keep going. So, here we are. It's 2006, and for some reason I'm starting to feel like I'm living in, you know, 1886. I mean, I really wonder where this country's gone to, and it's getting very, very scary, and I think my computer's died again.
We're having technical difficulties. Please stand by. This is the beauty of radio. Ready to go there, Bruce?
Yes. All right. This is Bruce Burson, Forest State Radio. My buddy John apparently had a technical difficulty that occurred. And so I'm covering for him. Here I am back on the air. Bob, by the way, that was some great music. That was the grooviest elevator music I think I've ever heard. So thank you for that.
Dude, that was acoustic alchemy. Those guys know how to play an axe.
I knew I'd get your dander up.
Mellowly.
Okay. But I wanted to, I wanted to dovetail a little bit on what John was talking about, and that is that, we have seen the erosion of our liberties.
Hey, Bruce?
Yes.
We do have a couple of people on hold real quick.
Okay.
First of all, Ben Birch is with us from White Rose Society.
Cousin Ben?
Cousin Ben to you.
Well, bring him on in here. Hey, cousin, how you doing, man?
Doing great. What's up? I guess you had a damp old time, eh?
It was very wet. I mean, I'm glad that I had an umbrella, but it really didn't help much. It just kept it off my
head. Hearing me?
Wow, it's old home week now. Is that you, John?
Yes, it is on my other computer. I think I just realized it's pushing 42 degrees in this room, and I think computer one just overheated.
Ah.
Yeah, you're clipping, man. Turn down the gain a bit.
Okay, I've got him down. So try again, John.
Right. Sorry, that was also me hollering.
Okay.
How's that better?
Ah, much.
Sorry, guys. Hey, you came and filled in. How you going, Bobby?
Well, I was right here, standing by.
Ah, and Bruce is there. Cool.
And Ben Birch is here.
Oh my God!
It's
the Four Musketeers.
It's almost like a family reunion here.
Well, cool. So we need to go out and find ourselves a bar wedge, huh?
Hey Ben, I never did hear the joke about the purple finger. Could you enlighten me on that one?
Ben had John laughing, I guess, for an hour.
Oh man, I fell off my chair. I was crying. The tears were dripping onto the insides of the lenses of my glasses. I'm telling you, man, you never cease to not slay me when you ring any show.
Why, thank you.
Oh, man, we gotta do Ben's comedy half hour sometime.
If I put all my bits together, I might have a half hour.
Oh, yeah? What about your
half
bike?
Hour?
That's one of the real problems with modern media is it's really hard on comedians because, back in the days of vaudeville and, you'd work up your comedy bit and you'd refine it over time and you could play the same bit, in every city you went to because no one had seen it. Now you do it once on radio and it's gone. You can't do those jokes again.
Absolutely. I've thought that myself.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Here's a really amazing thing we're doing here. I mean, here I am talking on a phone in Illinois, to somebody who's in Australia and another person who's in West Virginia and somebody who's in, you know, in South Carolina.
North Carolina.
North Carolina, sorry. you know, we're being listened to by people around the planet.
You got to love the internets.
You know,
all three of them?
This is, the conspirators in 1774 did not have this kind of stuff going for them.
Wow.
I think they called it Paul Revere.
What was that?
I said, yes, they did. They called it Paul Revere.
Well, I think I'm finally coming back down to earth after the mass technology crash on this end. That was a bit scary. I have no idea how long I was talking to nothing.
Just a couple
seconds. Oh, no, you were actually on the whole time until you said, I think my computer is down.
Oh, right.
You were just coming through. Well, you know, nothing was wrong, really.
I had no way to tell. My screen went blank. And that was it, and it's completely locked. I'm looking at that computer here, and it's completely locked up. I just went and patched into the other machine that's here and rang back up. So, man, I remember when we were listening to the State of the Union. I have no idea what you guys were talking about before. But I thought it was actually really great when Bob just kind of let people ring up like you, and everybody's just kind of free-form commenting and play-by-playing over the president, and really wouldn't have mattered who was on. The cues would have come in at the same time. Lie, 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 lie. He's nuts. Lie. He's a freak.
Well, you know, anything is better than listening to him. I mean, my God, more insightful. You know, I used to own a tavern. That was a family. That's when I grew up. And I've heard drunken, construction workers at 2 a.m. making more sense than he made.
You know that clip that Bob played in the news. He sounds drunk there.
Well, he is drunk much of the time. I mean, if I had, you know, I would testify to it. I mean, I've seen a lot of drunk in my time, growing up where I did, doing what I did, sending bar, you know. Even when I was like 5 years old, I was in there filling up the coolers and carrying ice up from the basement, emptying ashtrays. And, you know, so I've seen more than my share of drunk. And
yeah.
I am absolutely certain that George Bush is off the wagon.
Oh, absolutely. And I really do believe, and from my own observations over my years and years of touring, is the fact that I do believe half the time he's back on cocaine again, because I have had to scoop many a useless performer out of the dressing room, and I know that jaw grind anywhere.
You betcha.
There's nothing else that does that. Now, you know, it's undeniable, and Ann Coulter's got the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Ann Coulter has quite a past on her.
Oh, I bet. I feel bad for Bill Maher, though. Don't you reckon that he just dreads that whole experience?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Here's the deal. My friend who used to go to dead shows, okay? You know, and Ann used to go to dead shows, and they say that Ann used to do stuff out in the parking lot. Well, let's just say we could give her the name Ann Locomotive Coulter.
Well, I and all I know is there's an Adam's apple in there, and I still can't explain that.
Well,
she's
what I've heard, okay, and I've heard this from a couple of sources now, and I believe it's possibly true, was that she was born with ambiguous genitalia and was gender reassigned at a very young age.
Really?
That's what I heard.
That could actually honestly explain a lot, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
That would explain a hell of a lot in how a woman can excuse such nasty male-type ideals.
It explains a lot of the anger.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'm sitting there wondering if I'm going to get a cue about us going to a break here at about the half hour. But, You know, I tell you, this has been just one hell of a week. And, Ben, thank you so much for all your involvement during the filibuster to the filibuster to the filibuster, because between you and Bob, the Turks got out to a whole much larger audience than they ever would have gotten. So as I'm hearing the music come in, thank you, Ben. Thank you,
You're
Bruce.
Welcome.
Thank you, Bob. And we'll see you on the other side of this break. This is For the State Radio.
Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Mrs. Deer, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you come up with?
Well, we're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
A little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
Now, if Karl Rove is a whistleblower, then Jeff Gannon's nickname at the White House is Whistle.
Thank you.
right, everybody, welcome back.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Sieg Heil, quack, quack. Did I know it was going to be like that when I wrote it? Welcome back to Fourth Estate, everybody. We're in the last half hour. We're getting in the home stretch of the first 3 hour and live show. We didn't know we were going to kind of end up like this, but hey, all is good. I tell you, this has been, I have not been running on this much adrenaline in yonks. That's a long time in Australian. This has been like the best time, and I know that I came on at first all guns a blaring, but it was that restraining whether I get on at all. And so when we finally came on, it was like an explosion. So everybody, thanks for sticking through the deluge at first. And we're rocking on here. So, you know, and I hear that my buddy Bruce is signing off, hitting the rack, and he deserves it because the guy's been out there with his feet on the ground. He rocks. And, you know, everybody say night, Bruce. And, you know.
Night, Bruce.
You're you the man. Anyway, getting back to business, people. So, I was on a rant before I fell off air and without falling off air and, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, we're going to, oh, sorry, thank you, Bobby. I'd forgotten all that. We have a phone call. Arbitender's back with us. What do you got to say there, Arbitender?
Well, you know, thanks for letting me come on again, and thanks for letting me come on the first time. I got something else on my mind. I mean, I think we actually have to start thinking about, you know, solutions. And short of, you know, sharpening the pitchforks and getting the torches and that deal, we still have some legal avenues unexplored. And, I'm ready for a real representative government. I would really like to see that happen during my lifetime. And go ahead.
I think we all are ready for a representative government because I think we're all tired of screaming into the ether and getting nothing back. So okay. I think it is about. I think we have to focus our energies now. I think there's. Go ahead.
Dig it. I found something kind of interesting. There's a little known but still precedent for having used section of the House rules for the 109th Congress. That's our current Congress. I don't know if you know the House rules incorporate Jefferson's manual, which was written in the early 1800s. Thomas Jefferson put together sort of a – it's kind of on the order of Robert's Rules of Order, but it's for the House. Anyway, they go into some detail about, you know, the way in which impeachments may be initiated. And I think we're going to have to impeach a whole bunch of people. And I think we're going to have to take it from a whole bunch of directions since there doesn't seem to be any representatives who have got really, you know, the stones to step up and do what they're supposed to be doing. Well, there's a couple. Conyers, you know, possible exception. I guess there's 14 people signed on to the Conyers resolution, but I think we need to take other approaches also. And there's a rule in the House rules for the 109th Congress. Section 603 defines the ways in which impeachment proceedings can be initiated, and among them are by charges transmitted from the legislature of a state, which means that a state legislature, meaning both houses, can pass a joint resolution with a proposal for impeachment, and that joint resolution has to be taken to the floor of the House and presented to the floor of the House. And as long as it contains an impeachment proposal in it, not just a list of all the bad things they did, but the impeachment proposals, actually, that item has to be treated as privileged business, which means it steps in front of all other business before the House and must be dealt with before any other business can be dealt with. It's a front row seat charge. And even if the House did what they probably would do with it, if we had a series of states marching forth with impeachment proposals approved by joint state houses, I think we would have some very interesting political theater to deal with. And there's some possibilities as far as this goes. Vermont is in a very good position. As far as if you're going to look at it from a partisan direction, which I think we kind of need to, Vermont's got in their state house, in the House, 83 Democrats and 60 Republicans six progressives and an independent, and in their Senate, they've got 21 Democrats and 9 Republicans. And Rhode Island is very well positioned also, similarly, as is Hawaii and as is Massachusetts. And
that's really interesting because, okay, if we're not able to do it through the federal, but I think Conyers is our best bet there. Would you do me a favor? Email me everything you have on this.
Okay.
John, J-O-N at Fourth Estate Radio.
Okay.
And in a post-show post, I'll put it all together and make it available to everybody. Maybe this is an avenue. I love our listeners. You guys rock.
Did you say John? Could you say that email address again?
J-O-N?
Uh-huh.
At fourthestateradio.com.
Okay, you got it.
Right on. You rock. Thanks for calling, darling, and just keep sending that stuff because it's this networking that's going to make it possible for us to get a grasp on this and get the reins back.
Yeah, we're going to take them down, man. They're coming down.
Love you, darling. Thank you very much for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Right on. I love having listener calls. I can't even tell you. Bob, this is just the best, man. The stress and everything made it worth it, you know, and we're going to do this from now on, you know. We're going to work out the rest of the details between this and next week to, you know, make sure that we can do this every single weekend. Fill in the dead air time after, you know, the last news cycle on Friday has gone past. Because that's been part of the whole idea of this show, was that it had to come from a slightly different angle. Try and cover things that you're not hearing. I love being able to give you folks over in America a bit of the bird's eye view from the rest of the world, you know, because everyone, it doesn't matter what country you come from, you end up not being able to see the forest for the trees until you get out of your own bubble. And I had this same awakening when I got married, you know, and went and moved to Germany, you know, and I suddenly had all my preconceived notions of my country and my assumptions just pulled to shreds. And it was very hard to accept. And this is one of the things that makes this fight so hard when you're trying to convince people that in their minds really think the right thing, you know? And when the time comes that, you know, one by one, the switch flips, the light goes off, you know, we can't hold them too harshly for their past transgressions, because we need every single one of them to realize that they got to come and work with the rest of us so that we can, you know, repair this thing before the wheels fall off. You know, Gail and I sit here, you know, my wonderful partner, you know, she just, you know, we listen to the news and she's like, what's it going to take for him to take the streets? And I understand that everybody's really, really scared, and that idea of taking to the streets, you know, streams up ideas of violence, but that's not it. It's about getting out in mass numbers. Getting out in mass numbers and with one huge voice saying, this will not stand. Not in my lifetime, not in anybody's lifetime. You know, my son has that same debt already strapped to him. Thank God he's a German citizen. I'd hate to think of him actually being an American citizen, knowing the massive weight of debt that George Bush has put on every child in America, right? I mean, is this what we want to teach our kids, you know, that it's right to talk out one side of your mouth while paying money to somebody to say something else, while language. I mean, I've ranted on this many times before. You know, we have to get control of the language again. This is a huge part of our problem. You know, we've allowed these right wingers, and I'm sorry, these are the descendants of the Nixonites, as far as I'm concerned, the bloody ray gun generation. I mean, how bad were the 80s, aside from haircuts and everything else? I mean, you know. I look back, you know, we had the US Festival. It should have been the Me Festival, you know. I mean, it was the most selfish time I can remember. And the only thing that makes this, I mean, it's worse now, but it's different. You know, it's changed. And the thing that is different about it is that, you know, in the 80s it was very out front, you know. It was the me, me, me thing. And here, they're doing me, me, me while convincing you that they're doing something else. And I just can't stand it. So, anyway, I'd love to take another call before we get out of here. If someone wants to ring on the line, it's 304-658-3333. And, you know, I think I'm just going to go on free rant almost for the rest of the show, if you all don't mind. But, you know, I keep watching from a distance here. And, I mean, that's all I have. And thank God for the Internet, you know, that I'm able to log on and listen to Bob Kincaid and listen to Tom Hartman and you know, get together and carouse with people I've never met, but I feel closer to than, you know, people that I've physically known for years. But, you know, they're I can't even, you know, and it's going to take these kind of friends and networks to one, look out for each other, because as the whole thing comes to a head, I fear that it's going to get more difficult, you know? And I think people are going to feel more and more threatened, you know? And all this game with the surveillance and, you know, what went on in North Carolina, it's meant to scare you, to keep you from speaking, right? To keep you from being an American, doing what you're supposed to be doing as an American. You know, I mean, is it not written in the founding documents that if the government gets completely out of control and is no longer representing the people, that it is our duty to break it down and start it over? We knew this was an experiment, you know, and the experiment needs to have controls, or else you can't trust the results. And what we've seen now is we've had the controls, the oversight removed from the experiment, and it's now become something else. It still has, deep down in there, in its soul, there's still the heart of Jefferson in there. And we need to capture that again. You know, I don't know how to put it better, except for, you know, a lot of us have been hearing Mike Malloy doing his 1984 reading. And, you know, I think it's perfect because it is painting the picture for where we're going. You know? We are just at the threshold. And yeah, okay, Bob, we'll just keep going, man. And I'm scared. I am a scared grown man. You know, but my fear isn't stopping me. My fear is only making me more angry. And I have to remember to keep that anger focused and put it to positive use, or else I'm just going to turn into them. But I think I'm enough of an Aquarian that I always look at myself in the third person. Okay? And I kind of, they say that there's an Aquarian trait, that you have this ability to always look at things from all sides. And, you know, I've seen this in others, and I kind of know what they mean. You know, there's always this step out thing, and I'm thankful for it, because it keeps me honest. It keeps me honest, you know? And I don't know, kids. I'd love to get one more call in before we get out of here. It's 304-658-3333. I'm sorry I had to dump out of the chat, but, you know, my other computer corked it. So anyway, you know, I start to get a little bit speechless because I have just... I feel like the end of the line is coming. We're not there yet. But unless we get a hold of it again, We're going to completely lose it. And I'm being told that Arbert Ender has sent stuff through my email, and that is on my crashed computer at the moment, so I will get to it after the show. Thank you very much for that. And I will have the links to her Nixon story as well, because I have to read up on that, because everything that happened in Nixon's administration applies here. It just applies here. Okay? They're playing from the same rule book. We have the same players. You know, you have people from Iran-Contra that were found guilty of crimes against the nation for lying to Congress. But because they were appealed, they're straight back at work. You know? We have a death squad leader involved in our national security? Excuse me? I just... When does it end and when does accountability start? I actually think accountability started last weekend. I really, really do. I think that what the Turks started last weekend, they gave a venue for that energy that we all had. It was all out there, and it needed a conduit. And it was an amazingly beautiful thing. You know, I mean, we kind of got railroaded a little bit last week, but it wasn't long before I went, wow, look at all these people. You know, look at all these people getting together and talking, and we were actually getting real-time reports back of what people were doing, contacting the representatives, the reactions that they were getting, whether they got returns on their emails, whose email boxes were cluttered, who was backing, and we were getting this live play-by-play. And I think it's going to be up to us to stand firm and be the play-by-play guys. And every time they make a wrong move, we got to point it out. We got to point it out and shout it to the stars. Because, we've already had law and order brandishing guns at the citizenry. You know, where are we going to here? You know? I mean, I said before, I'm really frightened of another Kent State. You know, and when Bruce and I recorded the interviews with the two kids that were arrested, as it was developing, you know, I was going, okay, when do the shots get fired? And, you know, you folks might remember my friend Brian Stokes from here down in Australia, who did a report about the Cronulla riots for us last week. He was a young boy whose father was a professor at Kent State, I believe, if memory serves me right, when it happened. As a normal day, heading to the library with his father, as they made it do, his father threw him under a car as the bird to fly. Right? He was a kid. I mean, a child. But he remembers it distinctly. And when he told me the story, and maybe one day I'll get him on and he'll tell the story for himself, it was just vivid how terrifying this must have been for a child, you know? How, and here, you know, you're being told that here's the military. They're supposed to be defending you. And yet they're shooting at a bunch of college students. And I'm really, really, really scared that that's going to happen. But I want to move on to some happier things. A couple of programming notes. In a couple of weeks, we plan on having on the line to take your calls, the folks from Only Love Prevails. Here we go with the positive part, folks. This is a little bit of a worldwide peace experiment that I just think is brilliant. Okay? The basic idea is every time something horrific happens on this planet, just chant in your own mind quietly, Only Love Prevails. Only Love Prevails. Now, this ties into the ideas of, you know, string theory and whatnot, and we'll let them explain the science, how they came up with it. But there's the idea that once enough of a population accepts a certain idea as fact, it suddenly takes over the rest of the population as something already known. And by their math, they've come up that it only takes 80,000 people, and very possibly we could shift the mental direction of this planet, because it's not only about the United States, it's about this entire little marble that we all walk on. You know, we all breathe the same air. And one of the reasons why, you know, American politics takes such president over everything else in the world is because, you know, the single largest polluter, the single largest armed forces, at one time the single largest economy, not anymore, I don't think. But, you know, if we could actually change, like a light switch, the mental direction of how this whole planet is going, because you see that this is happening everywhere, this insanity is going on everywhere. If we could actually, like a light switch, just flip it around. What if that can make the difference? I reckon it's worth taking part in the experiment, just because since we've started doing it, we have felt less affected. Not affected, that's the wrong word. And, you know, it's... Bobby's trying to talk to me here. I can't quite see it, but yeah, I'm ready for the music whenever it has to happen. And, you know, folks, I love every one of you for everything that you're doing, because I know that most of you have your feet on the ground. You're doing the right thing. And we're, you know, we're in this thing together, as the music says, and I'm going to roll up the credits by saying that this show was produced and engineered in West Virginia by the one, the only, Bob Kincaid, and you must catch his show during the week, 10 Eastern. And you get him at headonradio.com. Thank you to Ben Burke, all of his work that he does. Throw him a bone during his fundraiser, and you get to him at whiteRoseSociety.org. You know, Bob, Agnes, God, we love you. Bruce Birch, I hope you're sleeping well. You deserve it. You know, this has been a trip, and I hardly remember any of it because it's going by like, you know, it's going by without me knowing. But, you know, thanks for all the calls. Thanks for everything. Thanks for hanging on when we lost a connection. You know, as our music always says, you know, we got a couple of things that we always play, you know. The time has come today. We are all in this together. And it's the heart of the matter. And I think that all three of those, I mean, they're special for me. All three of those songs, all three of those statements, because I think that they capture what it is that we, what really stands at the heart of everything, you know. And the time has come, if not today, it was yesterday. And here we go. Please, folks, the time has come today. And you know what? I'm going to let more of this song play on the way out than usual, because this is a little different than usual. You know, send us your comments. Email us at fourthestateradio.com. You know, visit the website. Leave us a comment on the blog. Whatever. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, everybody. Sing along with the song. I love you. We'll see you together. We'll be together and see you next week. I love you. This is John, Fourth Estate Radio.